Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Thank you so very much for tuning in to 101.5 on your FM dial. We've got an interesting program for you today, I think. You will agree later on. We're going to talk about asteroids and oligarchs and walruses. By all means, walruses and travel to the Antarctic as well as to Key West. So let's get underway. First, we're going into outer space. The near regions of space are filled with small asteroids that could destroy much of a city. This, according to studies appearing in the Scientific American magazine. There is a project called the DART Project, D-A-R-T, and it seeks to keep the asteroids from getting to Earth. And that's what I want to tell you about the next few minutes. And we begin with the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory in Baltimore. Researchers there and hundreds of others are taking part in what is called the Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART, Double Asteroid Redirection Test, a mission which is an ambitious effort led by NASA and the Johns Hopkins Lab to slam an uncrewed spacecraft into an asteroid. Why? To change its orbit. This will be a dry run for the real deal. One day, a technological descendant of DART could be used to deflect a planet-threatening space rock, which might save millions and perhaps billions of lives in the process. Well, back on November 23rd, DART launched on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from California's Vandenberg Space Force Base. Sometime next fall, it will smash into its target at 24,000 kilometers per hour. Ground-based astronomers will watch the rendezvous unfold with bated breath. They'll be hoping to see the telltale signs of a success, and that is a dust cloud and an asteroid dancing to human direction for the very first time. Will it work? Well, we really don't know what's going to happen because we've never tried it before, says one scientist from the University of Canterbury in New Zealand. Despite the prominence of Texas-sized asteroidal antagonists in Hollywood blockbuster movies, the biggest rocks are not a cause for much concern among the level-headed of the scientific group. Almost all asteroids a kilometer or larger, with orbits approaching the Earth, have already been found, and none will seriously threaten us in the next few centuries. So don't worry, we won't be here. Like much in life, when it comes to planetary defense, it is the small things that matter. The space rock that exploded in midair over the Russian city of Chelyabinsk in 2013 was estimated to be just 17 meters long. And if you multiply that by 3, you'll get feet. And yet its blast, equivalent to perhaps 470 kilotons of TNT, unleashed a window-shattering shockwave that injured 1,200 people. Well, these small impactors are disconcertingly plentiful. Of those at least 140 meters across, models suggest about 25,000 exist that approach within 190 million kilometers of the sun. Some of these so-called city killer objects may pass unnervingly close to Earth's orbit. And of these diminutive but destructive near-Earth objects, we think, according to scientists, that we found less than half. It's estimated that every century there is a 1% chance that a city killer will impact the Earth. Even if that happens, most of the planet's surface is ocean. And that suggests to us that a space rock is most likely to land in the middle of nowhere. But if one of them hits any nation, plunges into a country's coastline, or blows up overhead, it could cause one of the worst natural disasters in human history. Any given year, the odds are on our side. But if we wait long enough, our luck will run out eventually. And with that thought in mind, I'm going to pass you along to a little bit of music. I'll be back shortly. You've been reading about and also watching on television a group of people in Russia at the present time called oligarchs. The U.S. and its allies are going after the assets of Russia's billionaires. Just who are they? They're the dozens of ultra-wealthy Russians who schemed and swindled their way to control of Russia's most lucrative industries. The term oligarch was coined by Aristotle, but became popular in the 1990s when a handful of entrepreneurs and hustlers took advantage of the sudden privatization of the Soviet economy in order to buy up natural resources and formerly state-controlled assets. They did so by using rigged auctions and other trickery. A few even took control of companies based on ownership documents that they had produced on home printers. The first generation, most prominently Roman Abramovich, Mikhail Khodorkovsky, and Boris Berezovsky, and others, became the country's chief power brokers, essentially buying President Boris Yeltsin's 1996 election win for him. Vladimir Putin succeeded Yeltsin in 2000. In part through promises to eliminate the oligarchs as a class, but that didn't happen. A 2017 study conducted by the U.S. National Bureau of Economics Research found that Russia's wealthiest elite had at least $800 billion stashed abroad. That was roughly equal to the total wealth of Russia's remaining 144 million people. Well, what did Putin do? The ex-KGB officer wrested control of Russia's corporations and wealth from the seven biggest oligarchs. He triggered a prosecution and imprisonment of oil tycoon Khodorkovsky and forced two others, Vladimir Gusinsky and Berezovsky, into exile. Berezovsky, by the way, would die under suspicious circumstances about 10 years later. By using the state contracts like fiefs handed out in the Middle Ages. Putin cobbled together a new and more tightly controlled oligarch class from old St. Petersburg friends, from fellow KGB alumni and other members of the Siloviki, or the state security police and military elite. By 2009, according to a paper that was published in the intelligence by the intelligence firm Stratfor, 78% of Russian business and government leaders had ties to security organizations, including the FSB, which was the KGB's successor agency. This group is extremely loyal to Putin, largely sharing his grudges about Russia's failed experiment with economic liberalization and his paranoia about the West. How has the West responded to this? The US is currently sanctioning more than 400 Russians and looking into the finances of at least 50 oligarchs and Putin cronies. One chief target of US and European Union sanctions is Igor Seshin. He's Putin's one-time secretary who owns oil giant Rosneft and is widely considered as Russia's second most powerful man. Others singled out include brothers and construction magnates Arkady and Boris Rotenberg, as well as restaurateur Yevgeny Prigozhin, who helps fund the notorious St. Petersburg troll farm that spread disinformation during and after our 2016 US presidential election. Post-invasion economic disruptions have cost Russia's 20 richest billionaires about a third of their wealth, according to studies done by the Bloomberg organization. Researchers warn that even the most punishing sanctions are unlikely to make oligarchs take the risk of pressuring the autocratic Russian president to change his course on Ukraine. This is not the 1990s, and these people owe their position to Putin. Stay tuned. We're going to see what happens in the next few weeks and months. And now, I'll step away for a moment or two. I'll be right back. Our next topic of the day is about walruses. You probably never thought that you'd hear that, but on this kind of a program, a little of this, a little of that, you might hear about just anything. Well, we say welcome back to the walrus. A hunting ban had fostered the return of a nearly extinct walrus. Strange as it might seem, the ancestors of walruses originally lived in the tropics. They followed food sources north, and they ended up in two main places, the North Pacific and the North Atlantic. A large group made their home in the Norwegian archipelago of Svalbard, where warm and cool ocean currents meet. And over the past few million years, walruses have adapted to their frigid environments with long ivory tusks to protect them from polar bears and thick bristled skin with up to 6 inches of insulating blubber underneath. They learn to sustain themselves by using their sensitive whiskers to hunt for clams, breaking open the shells with their flippers and noses and eating them by the thousands. Sometimes they'd hunt seals. marine mammals to which they bear absolutely no close relationship. Walruses are the last remaining species in a family called Odobanidas, a Greek name that means those who walk with their teeth. The walrus is like a mythical creature, according to a research scientist at the University of California, Santa Cruz. He said they're like no other animal on Earth. Their closest living relatives are separated by almost 20 million years. Well, by 1952, Svalbard's walruses were nearly gone due to more than 300 years of ivory hunting. So the Norwegian government banned commercial hunting of these endangered creatures, and they began to rebound. In 2006, there were 2,600 walruses in Svalbard. And in the latest study, 2018, the number is up to 5,500. It's now common to see clusters of these social animals sunning by the water's edge. They fill the air with a cacophony of vocalizations that they make, like friends chatting and singing late into the night. Welcome back, walruses. It's good to see you. And I'll tell you about some travel in just a moment or two. And now we're in a new golden age of travel, and that's polar travel. It's never been easier to reach parts of the planet that just a century ago seemed unreachable. More than 74,000 tourists ventured to Antarctica during the 2019-2020 season, and that was up 27,000 from a decade ago, comfortably navigating waters that in the 1910s spelled almost certain doom. And it's not just the adventure set that's crossing the turbulent passage of waters separating Argentina from Earth's southernmost continent. It's families with children, retirees, luxury seekers, and everyone in between. That's because more and more ships are designed for polar cruises, with icebreaker hulls and inverted bows that improve handling in rough seas and minimize seasickness. Modern onboard amenities have multiplied as well. Add in a little bit of see it while you can climate change urgency, and the Arctic and Antarctic regions feel more enticing than ever. But if the cold is not your thing, how about walking on water in the Florida Keys? It was a railway known as the Eighth Wonder of the World, and now you see its remains anytime you drive on US Highway 1 across the Florida Keys. Its abandoned concrete pylons loom in eerie grandeur like a capitalist Stonehenge. Oil magnate Henry Flagler spent a fortune building his overseas railroad, which for three decades carried vacationers 156 miles from Miami to Key West, often over open water, as if they were flying 20 feet above the waves. A monstrous hurricane ripped apart the railway in 1935, but much of the longest crossing section, known as Old Seven, still stands. In January, a 2.2-mile section reopened to cyclists, pedestrians, and anglers. You ought to get down there and see it. Relive Flagler's dream of a bridge to Cuba. And finally, we have the Richmond, Virginia Poe Museum. If you're out traveling about in Virginia, be sure to stop in and see it. The local writers who founded the Poe Museum in Richmond, Virginia in 1922 would be proud that their tribute to Edgar Allan Poe lives on as a popular tourist site where two friendly black cats live among the world's largest collections, about 4,000 items, of Poe memorabilia. Poe only lived for 40 years. He was born in Boston and buried in Baltimore, but he largely grew up in Richmond after being orphaned. The four small buildings that compose the museum include the city's oldest residence, plus a garden shrine built from bricks of the Richmond building where the young Poe worked as an editor of a literary magazine. So going to the Poe Museum is about the closest you can get to seeing Poe in the flesh. So, three different places to go. Which one do you want? Be back in a minute or two. We're in the home stretch now, and I've got some odds and ends for you here at the end of today's program. For the first time, a majority of Americans, 52%, report having contracted COVID-19 at some point, according to the latest Monmouth University poll. Last August, 30% said they'd contracted the virus. After the Omicron wave, about 57% of Republicans and 38% of Democrats say that they have either suspected or confirmed infections. And then there's this. The populations of New York and Chicago and San Francisco and Los Angeles shrank by more than 700,000 between July 2020 and July 2021. According to the latest Census Bureau data. The pandemic and skyrocketing housing costs have managed to trigger movement to smaller cities, suburbs, and to rural towns. And Ukrainian officials have been using facial recognition software to identify dead Russian soldiers seen in photos, and then sending the photos to the dead soldiers' family and friends. That, according to the minister, the head of Ukraine's digital transformation ministry said, is to dispel the myth of a special operation in which there are no conscripts and no one dies. So, a counter to misinformation. And then this item. Russian precision-guided missiles aimed at the Ukraine are falling at a rate as high as 50 to 60%, according to three U.S. officials. The Pentagon estimates that Russia has launched more than 1,100 missiles, with such a high failure rate could be a major reason why the Russian military hasn't achieved more of its goals. And now, my friends, we've come to the end of another program. I hope we have entertained and informed you and maybe caused you to smile here and there. I want you to take care of yourself, stay safe, be kind to others. You'll surprise them. We're a lot better when we're kind to each other. And now, it's time for my friend Willie Nelson and I to go down the road again. We're looking for those items that fit right into a little of this, a little of that. They might be just about anything, as you can tell from listening to this program over the years. I'm liable to talk about anything from music to dinosaurs, and from warfare to kindness. So, Willie, it's time for us to leave. Head us on down the road. We'll be back next week, 101.5 on your dial. Please tune in. We very much enjoy having you around, and we want to please you. Goodbye, good luck, and have a nice week.